Talk first, build later. The startup step most people skip. Welcome to episode 3 of the i3 Lab podcast. It's time to start up. My name is Arjen Preci, and I'm joined today by...
My name is Forich.
Ale Gutierrez.
Welcome to the third episode of our podcast series. In the last two episodes, we talked to why do people get into startups? Is it money? Is it something else? And once you know that you get into that, what are the steps that you take, especially for student entrepreneurs and in university settings? What should they do to go through their startup journey? In this episode, we're going to dive deep into what you said earlier, talk first and build later. But what does talk first mean? This whole episode will be dedicated to what we call customer discovery. And we'll be explaining what customer discovery is. One of us will have the definition. and we'll go into details of why customer discovery matters and talk about some real case stories and how people can waste a lot of money in their startup journey if they don't do customer discovery.
Right. So first of all, Alan, you want to tell us what customer discovery is?
Yeah, so actually have the definition here. We have kind of the real definition of customer discovery and then kind of break it down into in simple words. So it's basically the process of talking to potential customers, users, or even stakeholders before building a product to understand their needs, problems, and behaviors. What does this mean? It's basically how you find out if the problem you are trying to solve matters to anyone and whether they are actually looking for a solution. That's customer discovery in simple words. And the goal is not just to sell your idea. It's basically learn about your customers, right? We talked about this a little bit in the previous podcast. Why matters going out there and doing your homework with the customers.
Right, and I think the learning is the important part, right? And I didn't already mention that if you skip this step, you lose money. Can we explain a little bit more why?
A lot of it. So what's also very important, I think, before we go into why do you lose the money? Well, you lose money because you will end up building something that people are not going to use because they don't really need it.
Right.
You think they need it. So because you had a hypothesis in your head and because you thought that something might be useful, I actually made this joke this morning with a friend of mine. I said, think of it this way, just because your head is scratching, that doesn't mean you need to go and invent a new type of shampoo. Maybe you just need to have a shower. So just because you have a problem, not every problem is a need. So we talked about it in the last episode. So customer discovery helps with identifying that need. And why do people don't do customer discovery? That's a very interesting thing because I've seen a lot of founders and people that were in startups, including yours truly here, myself, that in early days, there's a fear factor around doing customer discovery. And I think it boils down to, because entrepreneurs are sort of, you know, they're their own tribe. They're excited people, eccentric in their own way. So one thing, they're very excited, and they just want to go and build the thing.
Yeah.
I got this idea. Let's say the three of us get in a room. We have this startup idea. And they're like, okay, let's go build it.
Right.
Because it's amazing. And we say, okay, we just go and build this because, why wouldn't we build this?
And
because
you put a lot of money into it.
Right. And because we all agreed in it, let's go and do this. So one is excitement. The second is... also ego, because I think I'm right. Your ego gets sometimes the better of you. I need this, it's my stuff. This is my need, therefore it must be everybody's need.
They will have some sense of their pride, right?
Right.
So for them to just start up, there'll be some level of ego, and then it's just a matter of whether they can control it or not.
Right, because you think of like, I have this need, right? And then if I have this need, everybody must have it. And this is a big fallacy in thinking that way. And I think one of the other factor, which is sort of the third one, I think a lot of people fall into that category, is the fear part. Is a lot of people fear talking to people.
Okay.
And we can do the product development, and it's really kind of a comfortable spot to hide between we're building this and we're doing some features, adding extra stuff, but we never want to go in front of people. And when you tell me, for example, hey, Arjen, go and talk to potential customers. Like, no, because I'm tweaking my features a little bit more.
Yeah, I'm too busy for that.
I'm too busy now. I'm doing this and that. So the fear of talking to people, because it's not easy to talk to people, right? It's kind of, it's a bit scary to do that.
Yeah, but don't you think like sometimes might be like they just don't know like how important it is to go there and ask customers? Because, you know, we know, we sometimes ask our friends and relatives about this potential solution, and they say, that sounds like a good plan, right? And then you start from there and then just go there and build your products. But sometimes they just don't know, right?
Right.
So, or they don't know how to do it.
Yeah,
so that might be another reason, right?
That's the fourth reason. Maybe they just don't know at all that they have to validate the market first. But from my experience and, you know, talking to a lot of students that are working here at the I3 Lab, I think excitement is the biggest factor for them, at least, from my experience, because there are brilliant people, and they will come into the lab, they will have the product ready or the prototype or even some research or patent, and they will feel like this invention of them is going to change the world. But at the end of the day, they haven't done any customer discovery, so they don't know who's going to need it or who will even pay for it. And they would just, you know, get heartbroken because they have to change the product or they have to do something else altogether. So it was a pretty sad story, I'd say. But, you know, that is why we're here, so, you know, we can communicate the customer discovery to them. And then
I think you both make a great point. And to your point earlier, Alan, it's like, yes, a lot of people don't even know that there's a process, as we call it, there's a method to the madness of doing customer discovery, unpacking this, and going through this, validating your hypothesis that, okay, there might be a need, or also sometimes finding out that actually, you know, there's no need and I have to pivot or do something else. Do you want to walk us through from a practical background of like what does it mean? We're saying here in the podcast, you know, talking first. What does it mean to go and talk to people before you build it?
Right.
Because essentially for the untrained person, it sounds like, what do you mean go talk to people? Shouldn't I have a product? Shouldn't I tell them what my product does? You know, do you want to talk a little bit about sort of hard customer discovery? How do you peel the onion without telling them?
So let's assume that we have convinced everyone that we have to do customer discovery first now. All right. So how do we do the customer discovery process? Alan, you want to start?
Yeah, it's a great point, because sometimes students and in general, they think customer discovery is just the interview process, but there is something before actually doing the interview process. The first thing is to come up with some assumptions or hypotheses or theories about your solution or the customers.
Yes.
And maybe we can break down this in three types of assumptions. The first one is just to take some time to write down what do you think are the potential problems that customers are having. So we can say the problem assumption. So you write it down, so you have a clear idea of what could be the potential problem they have. The second would be the assumptions in terms of the current solutions. So what is out there, which is also important, because maybe, yes, there is a problem that exists, but what if there are more people outside offering the same solution to them? So we need to understand also from the customer's perspective, what are the current solutions? So that's the second assumption or second theory. And the third one we can say, what can be the ideal solution then? So let's write down an assumption about what could be the ideal solution from the customer perspective. So that would be the first step. Write down the hypotheses or assumptions. Once you have that, then you can come up with the questions. So now we have three types of assumptions. Now let's break it down into a couple of questions. We can start with you know, we don't want to have like 20, 30 questions, right? Yeah. We want to make this process short for customers also. That's another topic we can talk about later. Mm-hmm. You come up with 10 questions, 15 questions, whatever, and then those questions must be based on the assumptions. Not any questions, actually. But once you have that done, the third step is the interview process. So let's ask customers our questions.
Actually, when you explain it, it sounds simple, right? But this is the part that students actually struggle with the most because they cannot find the assumptions. Because part of the reason is because they just believe that it's true.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't know that it's assumption. Sometimes people will say, okay, you know, we have this box that can help people learn Braille. And the student would just say, people will love it. That's always going to be someone who will buy them. But if that guy hasn't talked to anyone else or the customers, they would not be able to know for sure that there will be someone who will actually buy the product. So what I think the first step that they have to do is to really, really look into whether there's someone who will buy the stuff. And that's the first assumption, right? That's the problem assumption that you talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And you really have to ask yourself, why would they want your product? Right. Or why would they want any solution at all?
Do you also want to talk a little bit about the, and if you want to unpack it a little bit even further, of like the method, how to build the questions?
Oh, yeah, right.
Because that's also that's a very sort of mm-hmm. a tricky area mm-hmm. where people go into questioning, but there's a method to how you build the questions
yes.
around customer discovery.
Okay, so the first thing will be do not talk about product first, because that's the reason to it. Because when you talk about your product and you know you ask your customer whether this product is good for you or is this you know will work for you, you will bias their opinion right off the bat. So let's say, you know, if I ask Arjen, do you want this pen?
So I'll say either yes or no.
Yeah, it looks nice,
and
right?
And then it's done.
Yeah, right. But you don't get anything. You don't get any insight. You know, you don't get any information that you can use from the customer discovery at all. You don't know why he would like it. You know, it just looks nice. Is that the reason? You know, you just want to ask him about the branding. Does the branding look good? But you have to ask that specific question. So product shouldn't be the first thing you talk about. You should talk about the problem first. Maybe if I want to sell this pen, I will ask Arjen, do you want something to write?
Do you write a lot?
Do you write a lot?
Do you run out of ink?
Right. Do you run out of ink often?
Whatever.
Do you like the styles or something of utensils or you know any stationery do you like? Does it have to be luxury or do you have to carry that a lot? That could be a list of questions depending on your assumptions of what you want to sell.
So is it true that you have to keep all your questions open-ended in order to let people...
That's a very good question. That's a very good question.
People in?
Yeah, they must be open-ended, at least most of them, so you can get... You know, the most important part of the interview is listen, right? So if you don't ask open-ended questions, you won't be able to listen much about the customer. So listening is very important. It's more than just talking yourself. It's listening to customers. So that's why you need to ask open-ended questions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is actually, in research, we call it semi-structured interview.
Okay.
What it means is that we have a list of questions that you want to know. And that's the list of questions that Alan already went through, which is assumptions that you have to test. And you have to write that out. Then when you talk to someone, you ask that question as the opening, as you say, and then you just keep listening to them and then ask follow-up questions, and then you try to draw the insights as much as possible from that question. Then when they start to go off the rail, you can just go back to your another question and then just make sure that you validate all the assumptions while also getting as much insight as possible. And that's, you know, I would say the better way of doing it than just asking whether they like your product or not.
Yeah. And just to sort of dig a little bit deeper on that, just hopefully for the audience that might listen to this, open-ended questions, the basic essence of it is that you don't ask a question that will end up on a yes or no. You want to open it up so they talk, because if they talk, they will most likely tell you the pain points.
Mm.
And if they tell you the pain points, then you most likely, if you're listening or transcribing now with new tools, you will go back to this and you can hopefully later look for patterns.
Okay, just for the audience, can you tell us what is the pain point? What the word pain point or the phrase pain point means?
Oh, so related to customer discovery, a pain point is something, it's just like your body when it's hurting, you have a pain point. Business have pain points, to simplify it. What is hurting that business? You might go with the assumption that, like we talked about assumptions early, that, I don't know, the construction industry, there's X problem that they have.
Mm-hmm.
And most likely it's not that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's most likely it's not X, it's not Y, most likely it's somewhere in between X and Y.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have open-ended questions, then they will explain what their major issues are.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do 10 interviews, 13, 15, and then 20 and 25, then you can open up yourself to look into patterns. And if a pattern begin to form, maybe you have something there.
Yeah.
And that's the sort of the initial stages of perhaps, like, I can see something happening here.
Mm-hmm.
It's not what I wanted, because I thought it was that, but it's nowhere near it.
Yeah.
But now I can see a pattern,
mm-hmm.
because 25 interviews that I've done, most of them are hitting, you know.
Yeah.
They all want Advil for this reason.
Yeah, that's a really good.
They have that headache.
That's a really good point.
To simplify it in that way.
That's a really good point, because sometimes customer, when you do a customer discovery and you do interview, customer will not be able to tell you exactly what they want. Sometimes,
no.
Sometimes. So that's why you have to, like, you know, to try to creep in and then keep asking questions and then really find the patterns of the customers that you have talked. Maybe, you know, you probably have to talk to at least 30, 50 at the early stage of startups.
Mm-hmm.
You have to talk to a lot of people, a lot of people.
And also important, I think, I don't know, we want to maybe take a minute to talk about in the customer discovery process, to your early case that you used, there are some times where the users and your customer are different people.
Mm-hmm.
So then you have that dual approach that you have to figure out, because if your users are not paying for your service, they might give you the most amazing positive feedback, but the people who might end up paying for the service, you have to do customer discovery on them.
Hmm.
And there's two sets of, there's a different method.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, the users matter, because they're using your platform or service or product you're building. But for you, what really matters is the person who is in charge that you're going to sell that to and will pay you. And if you've done the wrong customer discovery, you might think that, you're doing something great because 35 users.
Yeah, you need to ask two different types of questions
for
users, for customers. They have different needs, different pain points, as you mentioned.
Right.
One of them is the buyer, or decision maker, we can call it as well. So that's a great point. But I wanted to discuss something before talking about how do we do with insights from the interview, is because we as the R2A Lab, we understand this difficult process. As you mentioned, it takes time and money. So we understand this, and for the WBI students out there, as we understand this problem, we have come up with some tools to help them to make this process a little bit less complex. And we have built some customized AI models for them so they can actually come up with the assumptions. So they are struggling writing the assumptions. The tool is going to help you to write the assumptions. Second, based on those assumptions, it's going to help you to actually write the right questions. And finally, and not less important, it's going to help you to understand and interpret the results from the interviews. So these three steps, the AI models we have trained, are going to help you.
Croy, that...
Nick.
That also won the Venture Forum 5-minute pitch competition last year.
Yeah.
Great stuff. So CROI stands for College Return on Investment, which is for high school students that are trying to go to universities.
Financial literacy.
Yeah, so technically you'd think, okay, oh, students are his group. Mm-hmm. Actually, no, the parents are.
Right.
Because they are paying the money.
Yeah.
So you might talk to students. Students are in users, and then
they might use it with the parents, but the parents are the one paying.
Mm. Right.
And so then and then also it goes a bit further, depending on his on the business model. Is he selling to parents? Then the parents are the people. Or is he selling to schools to help their students? And the schools becomes... He
needs different to business models.
Different business models, then you have different customer discovery.
Yes. Yes.
So it all links to that business model canvas that we talked a couple of episodes ago, and how every time that you move stuff around, then you have to redo certain aspects of it. And the case that you mentioned earlier, the Braille box, it depends also what that company is doing with it. Are they selling direct to consumer?
Yes.
Then most likely the parents of the visually impaired children would be their direct customers, so they have to figure out customer discovery for them.
Right.
Or the model is going to be going to schools.
Mm-hmm.
And then they need a different method of customer discovery for schools, because schools buy things differently. Yeah. They have different budgets, and they have to take all these stuff into account. Mm-hmm. Or they're selling to both.
Right.
And now you have to do double that's gonna be the customer discovery.
Basically, users are those who use your product, right? And then customers are those who actually pay for your product. But it doesn't mean that they have to be separate. Sometimes people who use the product also pay for the product. Like, you know, if you sell to the customers or the consumers, but let's say if you're selling to, let's use the Braille box example because we already brought it up. If we are selling to schools for blind people, the one who actually use the product are, you know, blind students, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the one who actually pay for the product are the schools. So there are different segments, but it doesn't mean that you only have to talk to your customer, which is the school, because you have to talk to your users too, because you have to know whether your product actually works for the users, for the customers who actually pay for it.
And the same thing, the same thing goes for Technotone and with PAO. They users will be disabled people for their wheelchair attachment. But depending on their business model,
what's a company? Just short description.
Yeah. So PAO is portable affordable wheelchair enhancement. Yes. Yeah. They made my job difficult here, but it's okay. The same thing goes for them. Are they going to sell to elderly homes, senior living?
Yeah.
Different customer discovery set of question and method how you build them. Or are you going to sell to direct to consumer? Mm-hmm. And then that's a different type of customer. And sometimes, to your point, the customer user is the same.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they're not the same.
Right.
Yeah, I'm talking about PAO. So what they do is, so the customers are, you know, these actually the buyers, the decision makers, but they also understand the pain points of the wheelchair users. So they need to understand both, right? So I would say it's part of the same customer discovery process, but with different interview questions. So you invest some time with the user, but also with decision makers or buyers.
Mm-hmm.
And to that point, if by this at this point in the podcast, if you're still listening or watching, if we've confused you enough, or if we clarified, you can come always to the i3 lab and make use of our resources and our team, and we will help anybody that it is struggling or trying to figure this out and help them out to get to a better place.
Yeah, talking about resources from the i3 lab, how do we find those customers? My favorite is using LinkedIn because we can, for example, find students or alumni. In the case of WPS students, we can easily use LinkedIn to find these customers who were, let's say, students, alumni from WPI, and then we might have more chances that they respond to us and might be willing to do our interview process. So LinkedIn is one, but what else can we use to find those customers?
So it depends on what your idea is, right? Let's call it an idea for now. It depends what your product or service is. If you're into software, tech, all this kind of stuff, LinkedIn is sort of kinked for reach out. Mm-hmm. And I will plug this in. WPI students are super lucky because WPI alums are this amazing tribe of people.
Yeah, they're very supportive.
Are extremely supportive and very responsive. I'm yet to reach out to an alum saying, hey, can you help me with a student company? Mm-hmm. Do they need your help and your expertise for them to say no? They always like, yep, willing to help.
Yeah.
And I always make sure and tell students, you know, these people are really busy and doing big things in you know in the world of business, and they're giving the time back for this, which is wonderful. So LinkedIn is definitely one of the big areas. Conferences, it's another area. For example, if you're doing, I don't know, there was a material science conference in Central Mass a few weeks ago. So if you're doing something in that region, you're going to have 200 companies in that room. You might not be able to do all the customer discovery there, but you get connections
and
follow up.
Connections and networking events and stuff. You know, we have all those there, even in Boston or here, or even close by. There are a lot of networking events. And the reason why we really have to do that, and we really encourage all the students to really talk to a lot of people, not necessarily have to be your customer, but you have really, really have to talk to a lot of people, create a lot of connections. And the reason is because Alan, strand of weak ties, right? Granovetter, 1973, which is a paper, is a really, really established literature that talks about the strength of weak ties. And it literally means what it means. The weak ties are, you know, the ties when you don't really know someone close enough to like have a coffee with them or something. It's just like, you know them, they exist. And, you know, you eventually you will find that ties that could be useful. You know, they might know someone that can connect you to the customer, or they might know someone that can connect you to a mentor or even accelerators or even VCs or fundings. So I really encourage everyone, not just students, you know, any entrepreneur in general, anyone really, you know, it will benefit everyone when you know a lot of people, right? Because you have this strength of big ties.
Yeah, there is less bias too. And whatever question you ask, they will be honest with you, most likely.
Yes,
if you compare
true.
With our friends or relatives,
yes,
you know.
Yes.
But did you know there is another way we can do customer discovery, at least initially when you're not sure about how to deal with customers or you want to try it out? You can actually use AI models.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually ask any AI model and ask this tool to imagine, let's say, you are this type of customers, you provide the profile, and then you can insert your questions and you're going to come up with some good potential answers. I'm not saying this is going to replace the real customers, but it's kind of a initial tool they can use to start getting familiar with the process of customer discovery.
Yeah.
So you can clean up a bit, you distill a little bit before.
Yes, you can practice your questions and see the outcomes. And
I actually tried that before, and it did pretty good job, but you know, that's just practice though.
Yes.
So, but it's a good starting point to distill the idea a little bit and you know, refine your questioning and
you can start with the GPTs and then you jump to LinkedIn and Reddit and then you can start doing real life interviews exactly.
Yeah. But you know, it's very important that you at some point you need to get out of your dorm room into the marketplace and talk to people.
Yes,
this
Please.
Is very important.
Mm.
Because there's nothing that replaces talking to people. You know, it's custom AIs and GPTs and LLMs, all are great tools, amazing tools. We live in great time for this because they're super helpful to us, but they don't replace talking to people. If you cannot build anything if you don't go out and talk to people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and before we wrap up, we have the interviews, we got the insights, we refine our value proposition, we refine our prototypes. What do? When we have the insights from the customers, we validated some ideas, we were not able to validate some, or we partially validated some ideas. What do now with that information?
So I think I mentioned a bit earlier about looking for clues and forming So the whole point, when you were explaining the definition of customer discovery, is like, what's the goal? It's like to listen to people to really figure out if they have pain points.
Yes.
Or you just thought they had pain points.
Right.
And oftentimes you'll find out that it's most likely not exactly what you thought, but something similar, and that's actually a great thing.
Yeah.
So you get, let's say you got 30 customer interviews, you brought them in, and now you're looking at like, okay, what do I do with this? The first and foremost thing you should be looking at, like, for patterns. Out of these 30 people, how many do you have that they've told you the same thing over and over and again? I'm struggling with this. This is just a nightmare. If we can fix this, oh, it'd be great. Or you're asking them, for example, I'm just make a random example, like, hey, do you want to buy another? You know, I'm building a CRM tool or whatever, or a software thing, and they're like, I couldn't care less about that. But if somebody could fix this, it would be great for us. And they're over and over and over again. These people are mentioning something that you're not thinking about. As something that's hurting for them and pain point. So then you can see that there's a pattern forming. And then you can act on that.
Right.
What do we do with the patterns we found?
So you can pivot what you're working on.
Yes.
So you work on the prototypes.
Pivot.
And you work on the prototype, then now. So, for example, when I'll actually give you the PayPal story. In early days, PayPal was packed with features. And they took it to a bunch of people and users and potential other institutions. It's like, hey, would you use this? We have all these features. And people kept asking them, like, this email thing, you can just send money with email and you can register, and is that easy? And everybody kept going back to that.
Right.
Because and we're talking back in the day when opening a bank account, you needed a million documents or whatnot, not like it is now. So they stripped everything out and say, okay, here's PayPal. You send money with your email. You receive money with your email. See you later.
So you listen
to your customers. You listen to your customers. Yeah. So you look for patterns. You take this. You analyze it, and then you listen to it, and you make decisions upon that. You pivot your idea.
Right.
Because if you don't do, then you spend a lot of time doing customer discovery.
Yeah.
Just to think and to say, like, no, I think they're all wrong.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go ahead and do what I
do. No one gets to buy your stuff.
Right.
I'm actually going to push a little bit more because, you know, setup is not rainbows and unicorns. That would be some hard time too. And if you find that no one is going to buy your stuff, you really have to pivot. You have to change your product, or just you have to make some alteration to it so that it connects with that pain point, or else no one's going to buy your stuff. You're not going to have revenue. You're going to fail. So the pivoting part, it's something that I see a lot of people struggle to do, because they don't want to, you know, they don't want to just throw away what the hard work that they have done. There are a lot of success stories of people that pivot. One that really stuck in my mind was the YouTube actually started off as a Tinder for the, you know, matchmaking, basically, like,
oh, I didn't know that.
like really, really, really matching people, couple matching, but they used videos instead of just pictures on Tinder's. But they found that a lot of people just post videos on YouTube, and they just use it as some kind of social media to like interact and then just share their stories and stuff. So that's why they pivot into just having this video sharing platform that we all know of.
But to your point of pivoting, I mean, that's a great story. To your point of pivoting is like most companies, most startups that end up making it, they do pivot. Because most of the time, your hypothesis is not right. And people that do startups, they're, like we said in the beginning, they're proud, a little bit of ego. You're super excited about it, but if you don't think clearly, if you don't distill it, if you don't go through customer discovery, and if you take customer discovery seriously, then you end up pivoting because you are listening to potential customers and their pain points, and then you shift the attention to that, and then you build a business and a startup around that. And if you don't listen, you end up, what you said, nobody buys your product, and then therefore nobody buys your product, you have no company. not doing customer discovery in my early days has lost me a lot of money. Personal and company money, when we had a company going and we were doing other products and spinning out other companies from that, the lack of customer discovery, being too convinced, too proud, too excited, and thinking we're doing it because therefore we think we're right, and not distilling and hashing out your idea properly through customer discovery. I won't give the number, but you know, it's a significant amount. And I know a lot of people, I know a lot of people in the entrepreneurship realm that when they went and did an MBA later in life, or they came in touch with the process of customer discovery, they were like, oh yeah, I can walk you through the steps of why I lost this money or why my last startup failed because, this all makes sense now.
So postmodern stories.
Yeah. Bottom line, get out of the building.
Yeah.
Talk to people. Do the customer discovery properly.
Don't skip it.
Don't skip it.
Because that's the biggest indicator of whether there's going to be anyone who buy your product, right?
Yeah. Listen to our podcast. Join us for the next episode. Stay tuned. Until then, we want to thank the Global Lab that lets us use this space. And for all WPI students, alumni, staff.
Do you have a homework for them?
Whoever listens to this episode, and if you're working on a startup,